Simon is here, by the way, because you probably know already that the new Kurt Cobain documentary has been released. It's produced by Cobain's daughter, 22-year-old Frances Bean Cobain. It's called Montage of Heck. And we'll give you a little flavour of it in a second or two. Just tell us, you've been to see it. What's it like there, Simon?
It's surprisingly good. Like, I've seen everybody, Kurt Cobain has had dozens of documentaries made about him. Everything from the really good stuff right the way through to the, you know, behind the music where they've got three photographs and a couple of clips from an album. But this is very good. And the reason it's very good is because, like so many documentaries, if you have this stuff, it's a good thing. So they've got a huge amount of material, an awful lot of video, an awful lot of interviews, and they've managed to talk to a lot of the people that matters. And I think that really is because his daughter's involved that people have said, well, we won't talk to Joey Filmmaker, right, but we'll talk to you. Right. And it makes the difference to it. And it is very, very good. Even if you don't know, and I didn't, like, despite how famous Kurt Cobain is, I wouldn't know a huge amount about him, bar the really, I suppose, the end of life stuff that people probably know about. But this gives you a pretty good picture of him right the way through.
Okay, I'm going to annoy Nirvana fans all over the place. Like, I mean, the Nirvana kind of thing that happened, it was like a glitch, really. It was a moment in time, a very small moment compared to some of the things that have happened in music down through the years. And I know for a lot of people it was the most... I remember being here in this very studio talking to Jerry Ryan on the day that Kurt Cobain died. And Jerry was going, what is this? He's just got a half page in the bloody Times in London. Who is this guy? Jerry, relax. I understand all that. I'm just saying that is there enough to give us enough about a guy that you would be enoughed when you come out of the cinema and say, that was good?
I think what there is that it's a very interesting personal story in it anyway. And you know, there's some people who've got a very interesting personal story to tell. And if nothing else, regardless of how big of a splash you think that Nirvana or grunge in at that time made, the fact is that it's a very good, interesting personal story, and it's the makings of this.
All right, it's the makings of this. Okay, well then I'm going to give you just a little flavour of the film itself. We're talking Montage of Heck. In fact, this is kind of the trailery kind of thing. Kurt Cobain.
I was underdeveloped, immature, little dude that never got laid.
Kurt's brain was constantly going.
You go out for a few hours, you come back, and there was a painting on the wall, and you wrote a song.
He hated being humiliated. You'd see the rage come out.
This is what I've always wanted to do.
And I said, you are not ready for this.
He wanted to build a home.
If anything's going to stop me, pursuing rock and roll, he's going to be hurt.
We were all he had. He was searching for whatever made him feel like he wasn't alone.
Are you getting all this?
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it anyway. That is Montage of Heck, and it is from, it's by Kurt Cobain. As you say, the fact that Frances Bean is involved means that everybody
makes a huge difference to it, but it's well worth the watch.
In fact, that's one of the things about Martin Scorsese and some of the things he did. I remember people telling me about the George Harrison one being brilliant at that. I mean, he got ludicrous access that people were dying to get for previous years, and of course he's made so many big ones in terms of all the Bob Dylans, etc. So that's what we're looking at now. Simon Marr is here to talk about music documentaries. There are so many of them out there, so you picked a kind of a, I don't know if it's a top 10, but go for it.
This is probably 10 or 12, so the ones that are chosen at random. Now, here's the stuff that these aren't, okay? There's a lot of really, really brilliant, pure concert films that are out there.
Yeah, so not really talking that.
Yeah, so we've tended to avoid them. Now, a lot of these, they've got quite a lot of music in them as well, but we've kind of avoided those. And then I've gone out of my way to avoid the behind the music style documentaries, some of which have a few gems of information, but the rest of the time, it's just a funny camera angle on a black and white photograph while you talk to somebody who's a family friend at some point. So there's good stuff in here, some of which is very old, some of which is quite a lot more recent. So probably to start with one of the classics is the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter, right? So this is one that's close enough. It's just a mixture of concert film and documentary as well. But what makes this one so good is not just that they're obviously good documentary material, but it was a particular time in the Rolling Stones. So this is 1970, you know?
Yeah,
so
69 it was indeed,
So they were going through everything. That was a huge explosion of the Rolling Stones at that stage. They were very much living the Rolling Stones rock and roll lifestyle. It's amazing to watch, because the more you watch it, the more you think, it's 2015 and these guys are still together. It's 2015 and these guys are still on the planet. It's miraculous after having watched a lot of this documentary. But so there's some really good musical stuff in there. There's some really good insights, particularly into the dynamic between the band members. And then, of course, there's the, there's a very, I suppose, famous and iconic moment as well where somebody who's at a Rolling Stones gig gets stabbed by a Hell's Angel. And it's a sort of very, fairly famous story. But you get to see the responses of them to that as well. And it goes from being this amazing rock and roll, you know, hedonistic thing to suddenly seeing, you know, something else that happens, suddenly seeing mortality.
Yeah, but from beginning to end, you can scrape the dread off the air. It is scary stuff.
It is. It really is.
I mean, like, everybody's talked about it at Woodstock on this side in 69 and then Altamont on the other side. Yeah. And as John Lennon sang so brilliantly in that song, God, on his first solo album, The Dream Is Over.
Yeah.
And the dream is over when you see Altamont. The dream is over when you see the Stones.
Yes, very much so. Very much. And it is
poor old Mick, he's trying his best, like anybody. Hey, stay cool. Be cool. Mick, go back to London now, quick. Yeah. And in fact, the Grateful Dead were on that gig and they said, I'm out of here before they even played.
Yeah, probably not a bad call, but definitely worth watching. And if nothing else, to get that picture of, I suppose, you know, culture and how everything was happening around about 1969. So worth a watch. That's the Rolling Stones, Gimme Shelter. Much more recent, Dandy Warhol's Dig. Right, so a lot of people have heard of the Dandy Warhols. Probably not so many people have heard of the Brian Jonestown Massacre.
I was just going to say, it's not just the Dandy Warhols.
No, it's not.
It's the madness of the Brian Jonestown Massacre. Yeah.
And it's interesting because it is one of these comparison, one of these either-or things. And it was funny, as I was watching through a whole load of documentaries, of course, the last week for this, there was one that was done, it was two boy bands working together, you know, being created by two different people. And it was an attempt at trying to do something similar. But there was nothing to it. There's nothing to either story.
Really?
Yeah, there's nothing to either story. Whereas when you get into Dig, it's a very, very different thing.
It's a 10-year thing, isn't it?
Well, see, this is it. They have gone and they spent best part of 10 years going around following both of these bands and following everything that happened to them. And, you know, from the start, if you didn't know either of the bands, if you just arrived from space and you had a look, you kind of go, okay, both of these bands have some level of potential. And the trajectories start off quite similar, but very rapidly they happen to divert off in very different directions. And there's lots of Dandy Warhol's being successful sort of footage and slowly moving away from the roots. There's bits that are filmed outside a gig. I think it was the Dandy Warhol's in the Olympia or Vicar Street anyway. Mm. You know, but people reviewing the gig there, and then you can see the sort of the destructive nature probably of the Brian Jonestown Massacre. But you can also see sort of musically how good both acts were, really, but that because of what happened with them, or whether that be circumstance or choice or lifestyle, that the two paths went in a very, very different way.
Yeah, but the myth in some ways is that the Dandy Warhols found huge success and the Brian Jonestown Massacre just found obscurity. The Dandy Warhols didn't find really huge
much success.
Did they? Think about it. Okay. All right. Anyway, so that's Dig, the Dandy Warhols.
That's Dig. So that's one that's an awful lot more recent, I suppose. A very recent, we'll do a very recent one next, which is Shut Up and Play the Hits, LCD Sound System. Right, yeah. So this is only 2-3 years old. So LCD Sound System probably found, and James Murphy in particular, probably found something that an awful lot of acts have found it very difficult to find. Whereas he decided at some point, when the band were doing very, very well for themselves, he said,
stop.
This is it. Yeah, yeah, this is it. This is it. Anything I do from here with this band is going to be not quite as good. You know, and there are hundreds and hundreds of bands that you could look at now and say, nah, you really should have stopped 4 or 5 albums ago. But he has the sense to stop in this. And it's interesting because, once again, it's an awful lot of music that's included in it, but as well, there's a very, very good sort of interview piece with people around it, but particularly James Murphy himself, and how he justifies why he managed to get to that point where he was able to say very comfortably to himself, this is it.
Yeah, and
this,
the gig is Madison Square Gardens gig. My nephew was at that gig. He said it was fantastic.
That's a claim to fame.
There it is. Get the t-shirt. My nephew was at the Madison Square Gardens gig of LCD Sound System.
You'll do well on that, but Shut Up and Play the Hits. It is very, very good. Right, yeah, so that is that. Sort of story-based ones as well. My favourite story-based ones, there's two of these together. One is about Metallica, one is about Anvil, right? Mm. One is an incredibly human story, and one is just utterly bizarre. And strangely enough, the one
actually, wait a minute, I'm trying to work out which one you're going to think is bizarre.
This is the thing,
because I've seen the two of these, both should be filed under bizarre.
But in their own way, both are brilliant, right? So let's do Metallica first. Some Kind of Monster, right? Metallica, everybody, one of the biggest rock bands in the world. James Hetfield at this has gone to rehab to try and deal with his drinking problems. When he comes back, he's a different person. It's almost like he's had the version on the road to Damascus and he wants everything to be different. But when you're looking at, when you're watching, and it doesn't take long within this documentary to watch them. And once again, I come back to the dynamic that I mentioned with the Rolling Stones earlier on, and just watch this and go, these people are barking
oh, yeah.
mad.
No question.
They're absolutely barking mad. And I think it's possibly something that the bigger you are as a rock and roll band, because you're cosseted away from reality, is that you live in this world that it is almost like Spinal Tap.
Yeah, well, but the funny thing about it is the fact that they actually let this movie go out. You either praise them and say, wow, fair play, warts and all, or what, or are you completely mad?
I see, I don't think they get it. I don't think they would have seen the irony
see,
of this
that's
at all.
It. They're so
they will have just seen it.
No,
but
it's brilliant.
But
it is
a great watch.
Because they have this guy who's a kind of a, I don't know, kind of a human whisperer or horse whisperer type guy. Oh, sorry, he's a psychiatrist or whatever, or a psychoanalyst or a life coach or whatever. And like, you see his determination to hold on to the gig because he's getting 40 grand a month, and they don't see that he just wants to this nice little pullover, you know. It's so funny.
It's amazing to watch, because they're such a rough and tough band, and people kind of go, oh yes, there's lots of noise that this band make, but when you see them talking in a room, and particularly when the psychiatrist is there talking to them, and they get into the whole arena of talking about feelings and how I'm not feeling your pain or I'm feeling your love. But it is
actually, I have a fantastic story about that movie when I went to see it. I went with Joe Elliott, and I went with himself, just the three of us, and his wife to be at the time, and halfway through the movie Christine just says to me, yeah, no, I was their wardrobe manager for 7 years. I went, what? You never told me that before. No wonder you're... I just couldn't believe it. Anyway, here goes.
That's two t-shirts.
It's real confusing sound.
It's just jacking the vocals all up. I mean, it's clever and everything, but I don't see what it does to it.
I think that's how you hear it, dude. I mean, that's fine. I'm just trying to do something different.
I mean, I'm used to having the drummer do the beat part. You know what I mean? Holding it together.
What I'm hearing is, choose my words carefully here, it's pretty straightforward. In the guitar shit, it's a little stock. So I started trying to introduce some kind of edge to it from the drums.
Those things we throw out to each other are complete bullshit, you know? It sounds too stock, it sounds too normal to me. You know what I mean? You're saying this so you can get your point across about doing a drum beat. I mean, you know, it doesn't hold any water.
To you.
It doesn't.
I think it's stock. What? Which part of that is unclear to you?
Yeah, let's have a cup of tea. go on, there, Lars. Lars is out there. You know, Lars could have been, I think he was. Was he a professional tennis player once?
If he wasn't, he should have been.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But no,
seriously,
it is brilliant. It's brilliant in its own unique way.
Yeah.
There is only one of these documentaries that has ever made me emotional, and that's Anvil.
Okay, Anvil is astonishing.
Yes.
By the way, to be honest, I would never have known about Anvil if I hadn't seen
the
documentary.
Nor would I. And possibly, in a way, it's not a bad thing to come at one of these things not really knowing too much about the band. Anvil are the band who should have been huge. They should have been absolutely massive. They were playing on stage. They were playing with around about the time when they would have emerged first. They were playing on stage with the behemoths of rock at the time. And once again, they're another metal band, right? But they loved metal. And eventually, Sacha Gervais, I think it was the guy who decided he was going to make this into a documentary about them. And particularly following around the two guys who were supposed to be the heart of Anvil. But the movie starts, the documentary starts with them doing their normal Joe jobs that they do now. So while you're seeing, you know, Guns N' Roses off, you know, around the world and hotel rooms and throwing television out the window, this guy's going around delivering food. You know, that's a job in sort of small town.
In the freezing cold.
It's cold, it's snow, and there's... But he still loves the music and he still believes in Anvil. And that's what this story is.
Well, I read one review of that, which actually never occurred to me as a first one. I was like, why don't these guys just shut up and just work? They're never going to make it as bad. It's a good point. You see the sister and the wife being interviewed and everything. It's all, oh God, the poor guys. But then the Japanese bit at the end is fantastic.
If you've never heard of Anvil, you probably have never heard of Anvil.
Great movie.
But go and watch this. But I did, when they got emotional in this documentary, I got emotional
with their
as well.
Producer, who was a famous metal producer, and trying to get the album deal and meeting the guys in the big glass office. Oh God, it was so sad.
And you spend a lot of the time in the movie cringing at it. But you're still going, I couldn't more want you guys to succeed.
Oh, absolutely.
By the end of this.
At the festival too, they meet some of their heroes and that, and they play on the kind of a Donington kind of thing.
It is. But Anvil is brilliant. Anvil is absolutely brilliant. But it's one of the few that ever has made me emotional in these things.
Yeah.
What will we do next? Yeah, one, you two, Joshua Tree. We're touring Joshua Tree, and they released a tour film called Rattlin' Hum, which probably an awful lot of people know. 1986, 87?
Yeah, whatever, no, more than that, I'd say 89.
Oh, there it is, by that stage anyway. But they decide they're going around, they're doing their tour, but they're going to visit a lot of places. They go to Graceland, they go to Sun Studio, and when they get to Sun Studio, they decide, let's record some music. And it's the process of that, it's the story of that. And it's you two at close enough to their peak, I think, and it's really good. It really, really is very good. There's B.B. King in it. There's everything you could possibly want. There's really good music. There's really good music being made, and you're getting that sort of that look behind the glass as to what goes on. And once again, it is one of, I think it would definitely get into my top 10.
Okay.
Right, so these are top 10 in particularly random order, but it definitely gets in there as well. Depeche Mode, 101.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's like, it's so big. It's when they were playing to 84,000 people kind of stuff.
So they, big, they made their big music for the masses. So once again, very late 80s. Depeche Mode are in pretty good shape at this stage. Everybody, Dave Gahan, he's in remarkably good shape now, but he's mentally in a very good place. The band have gone, they've gone to the States. They've really broken the States now. As you mentioned, that 84,000, they're doing huge stadium gigs.
Dylan's biographer guy from Don't Look Back, D.A. Pennebaker made it.
Yes, and it is. It's so well done, and what is particularly interesting about this one, I think, is that there's a very good buzz, a very good vibe within the band. There aren't a lot of the problems that afflicted them quite quickly afterwards. Like by the mid-1990s, obviously, they'd gone down a very self-destructive path, but in 101, and which 101 finishes with the gig in the Pasadena Rose Bowl, so the end of tour gig again. It's a fantastic gig, and probably a lot of people would have 101, the live album, but the documentary itself, really worth watching as well.
Okay, any other ones?
We could continue. There's millions of these. What would you next? Oh, ELO, right. I'm a huge Jeff Lynne fan, right? I'm a huge Jeff Lynne fan. And The Beatles Light. Yeah, exactly. But when they came out with this documentary, it was titled Mr. Blue Sky, The Story of Jeff Lynne and ELO. It really isn't, right? It's the story of Jeff Lynne, right? There's an ELO story that's particularly fascinating that's out there somewhere, but it's not really part of this documentary because the ELO story became quite acrimonious after a while. You know, they were born out of Wizard and all sorts of bands, and then, you know, but eventually things started.
I wish it could be Christmas
every day. Absolutely. So, Jeff Lynne, though, but it's a story of him now and all the stuff that he's done. What makes this great is not alone just for sort of music nerds like me to watch how he records tracks, but it's the footage that is in there as well of him doing the Travelling Wilburys stuff. And it's the makings, once again, I've said that before, but it is the makings of this documentary because they have this amazing home video footage of it's him and it's Tom Petty and it's Roy Orbison, and they're recording this stuff in a garage, and you're looking at the garage, and behind in the garage there's just boxes, you know, marked summer t-shirts or whatever it is, but they're recording this stuff, and it's, once again, it's that access that you have, and it's really good. And what makes it even better still is that when you do that, they do a sort of a shot as they go around his home in LA, and you're seeing various singles and records as they lie around on desks, and there's a Pugwash single, and of course Pugwash,
really?
Yes, there's a Pugwash single sitting on top of Jeff Lynne's synth as well.
Right.
So that's Mr. Blue Sky, the story of Jeff Lynne and ELO. Not for if you want to get the story of ELO, but if you want to find out about Jeff Lynne and the Travelling Wilburys and get a bit of Tom Petty in there, well then, you're going to do well out of this one.
Actually, it's supposed to be very good. Tom Petty one. Peter Bogdanovich made it, Running Down a Dream. Did you ever see that?
No.
It's supposed to be great. I haven't seen it. Anyway, go on. Look, he's taking a drink of water. He's talking so much. We'll take a quick break for 60 seconds and back with this with Simon.
Entertainment with 2FM.
He's back, baby. Ikeno, the smashing comedy musical in the Olympia Theatre.
It's hilarious. It's so funny. So glad you came tonight.
Great show.
Absolutely brilliant. It's really good.
Best show I've seen in maybe 3 years.
Fantastic. Very funny.
Ikeno, now on at the Olympia Theatre. Extended due to demand. Tickets on sale now.
Not just a good musical, it's still a great musical.
Entertainment with 2FM.
A superb new album from one of Ireland's most exciting live bands has just been released. Stories from the Surface from Ham Sandwich is out now and available in all good music stores and on iTunes. Catch them live on their current nationwide tour, finishing up at Dublin's Olympia Theatre on May 29th. HamSandwichMusic.com for details.
2FM official on Facebook.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.
At 8 minutes to midday, when Larry takes over at lunchtime, Simon Mars here. We're looking at music documentaries because of the montage of Heck, which is out at the moment, about Kurt Cobain, Nirvana, etc. You're looking at other ones. By the way, two you haven't mentioned, which I don't even know if you're going to necessarily, but like the Oscar-winning movie last year for Best Documentary, that's in 2014, not 15, and also 2013, they were both music videos. One was 20 Feet from Stardom, and the other is Searching for Sugar Man.
True.
Both ones. So, yeah, I mean, like, Searching for Sugar Man was fantastic. What a great story, especially if you don't know anything about it beforehand, and I knew nothing about it in terms of the actual story. It's really good. 20 Feet from Stardom, everybody absolutely loved it, and I must say, I can see why they liked it, but I thought it could have been 10 times better because they don't kind of look at enough. It's about the backing singers of famous people, and Bruce Springsteen's on it, and Mick Jagger's on it, etc. And like 20 Feet away are these people who aren't nearly as famous and work 10 times as hard as all the rest of them. I just think it could have been better. Anyway, okay. Go on.
They can do that funny dance as well, where you kind of you wave your arms.
Well, when it starts, Ike and Tina Turner, get out of the way, folks. The Ike's fantastic. Anyway,
quality. Well, what we're doing is we're looking at some of the bit. Now, once again, there's even when I went to do a quick list, the first thing I did when I put in, when I just did the search, this was best music documentaries, and somebody had put up a list of my 850 favorite music documentaries.
Really?
And I thought, wow. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
I'm going to start with 10, and we're working from here. You mentioned Nirvana there because that's I suppose the spur on to do this feature. But the punk singer, and once again another recent one, is all about Kathleen Hanna. And she was the front woman of Bikini Kill. Round about that time again, once again, like Kurt Cobain, I suppose, somebody who felt not very comfortable with sort of fame and all the trappings and stuff that go along with it. One of the things I really liked about this documentary is that she has still maintained some level of anger, but not, you know, we talked about Metallica earlier on and they sort of got a token anger going on. You get the feeling that Kathleen Hanna is actually still genuinely angry about things.
And you do still get a part of the movement though with
you
it.
You do, yes, yeah. As you know, there's
plenty, whatever you want to call
yeah,
it.
There's plenty of it. So you
Nirvana,
can see,
Sonic Youth, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you can see where other people have dropped off, you know, or sort of have faded away with it, but she is still very much red and still recording some really, really good music as well.
Yeah, so that's I haven't the, seen it. That's the punk singer.
Only okay. A couple of years old, that one.
And, yeah, and it doesn't matter if you haven't heard of Bikini Kill, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, absolutely. And yeah. I've deliberately tried to pick ones here that you don't really have to be, you know, a big expert on each band on these. You know, there are some that go into the minutiae of chord, you know, selections and sequencing and all that stuff, and I've tried to avoid those on these. The National.
Some of those can be quite good, though. Have you seen the one? What do you call it? Oh God, It Might Get Loud.
No,
with the three guitars. What do you call it? The Edge, Jimmy Page, and White Stripes, and it's fantastic in so many ways because they're all doing their thing. Like Jimmy Page, I'm sorry, what do you call him?
Jack White.
Yeah, Jack White like has to be seen at the very beginning to be making a guitar out of a piece of paper. What is going to be? Well, that's actually a piece of wood near a veranda, and it's all very organic and cool. And then the Edge has no qualms about saying, "Here's all the effects I use, etc."
Yeah.
But then Jimmy does a little bit of. He tries to show you what guitar was. He does a bit of Link Ray's rumble, kind of air guitar, and it's just so cool. And then he does it's just the two guys looking at him going, oh okay, right, it's fantastic.
Okay, put it on
the
list.
Thing is great.
It goes on the list
anyway.
The National, Mistaken for Strangers, you've seen this one as well, haven't you?
I think Mistaken for Strangers isn't that far away, oddly enough, from Some Kind of Monster by Metallica. I don't necessarily know why the band let this go out in some ways now, because it's not really about Nirvana, it's not about The National, it's about your man, the lead singer's brother.
Yeah, and but this it's, is, also, it's filial loyalty again we're into here.
Yeah, but what it shows more than anything is just that on the road, The National are really boring. Like, have some fun, guys.
Yeah, no, they are not getting full value. There's some of the bands that you watch, and there's some
even
of the.
Even though they make great music.
But, yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely they do. But there's some of the documentaries that you watch, and you can see bands having great fun. We mentioned Rattlin' Home earlier on, and you can see that, if nothing else, at least musically out off stage, they're having great fun. The National, Mistaken for Strangers is Matt Berninger's brother Tom was given the, I suppose, the rights to go and film the course of a tour for them. And you watch it, and yeah, there's little bits in it. There's bits where you'll go, kind of go, well, that's interesting, but there's a lot of it where you go, I would not want to be on tour with The National. I don't want to be
on
tour.
Yeah, that's right. Like, the brother might be a little bit kind of out there, but like, it's actually very, it actually is quite a touching.
Yeah, no, it is.
The relationship between the two does develop very well.
And I think that's the thing. That's what works in this documentary, is as a relationship between those two. But in terms of the band itself, you're not going to learn a huge amount more about The National than perhaps you did not know beforehand. One where you will learn an awful lot about the band is Westway to the World, which is a documentary about The Clash. Right, and obviously Joe Strummer was the lead singer of The Clash. They were one of the few of those post-punk bands that went on, and once again were really huge in the States. But what's good about this one is that, again, it's access.
Sorry, I'm completely looking across here because I wasn't even listening to words, because I'm just looking at this text here just for one second.
Go ahead.
I saw Anvil at the Monsters of Rock in Dalyman Park circa 85 when they were first on. Then Mama's Boys, Twisted Sister, Motorhead and Black Sabbath. Shockingly bad Sabbath with Ian Gillan on vocals. Right, okay. As in Deep Purple. Anvil and Twisted Sister by far the best on the day. I was at that. God, I obviously missed Anvil.
So you could have seen Anvil in their pomp.
Yeah, I missed them. I didn't realise they were on that gig. Anyway, sorry, where were you?
What were you saying? The Clash, Westway to the World.
Oh, Westway. Here, I'll tell you what. It's about time I played a bit of something. Before I even mention it, I'll give you a bit of Westway to the World from The Clash.
Mick was intolerable to work with by this time. I mean, no fun at all. He wouldn't show up. When he did show up, it was like Elizabeth Taylor in a filthy mood.
And he didn't want to go on tour, which was like the perfect time to go on tour when everything was moving up.
I would say one of Mick's talents was not punctuality. You know, he was fairly late most of the time. But then, you know, talent's worth waiting for, I think.
That's the beginning and last voice, Joe Strummer, of course. So go on, tell us.
And yeah. I think what he says there, the very last thing he says, is that talent is worth waiting for. And that's what's good about the Westway to the World, is their interviews, and they're incredibly honest interviews, where basically they all just take cuts off one another, right? They don't necessarily come across as a band that are particularly united, but then you'll go into a piece of music, you know, you'll go into one of the songs and you go, this, whatever it was, these different and very, very diverse bits, put them together onto a stage and put them together into a recording studio, and what they made was amazing. Just for, in fairness, probably just for a brief time, because they got to a point a little bit later on where perhaps the elements started to drift apart again, but when they all came together and came together well. But it's for the honesty of Westwood.
Watching it, I had a bit of a night with BP the other week there at home, and I watched three of these things in a row. It's fantastic. Just one documentary after the other, and because Beep knows they're like, didn't happen to Jimi Hendrix. It's fantastic. Anyway, there's other ones like Back and Forth from Foo Fighters, No Distance Left to Run is Blur, AC/DC Let Them Rhyme, A Hard Day's Night even you could go to from the Beatles, etc. I think if I had to, Oil City Confidential has mentioned, Dr. Feelgood. There's also Live Forever, the Oasis one. I never saw it. It's Britpop with Noel talking on about it, etc. But my favourite, if I had one of all, would be Let It Be from the Beatles. Have you ever seen it?
Because you can't get
the damn thing. It's not out in DVD or anything. It is just the disintegration of a band. It is absolutely frightening. And the only thing is Billy Preston comes in and they're all on the best behaviour, and it would be just carnage if he wasn't there.
And he's trying to get it all back together again. But
Simon
Marr,
I'm
going
to have to kick you out because there's time to go. Larry's coming up next.